Encuentro Radio es periodismo, derechos, igualdad, dignidad, mujeres, inclusión, masculinidad, arte, expresión, libertad, esperanza, cultura, ecumenismo, literatura, historia y análisis. Pero en realidad somos una gran familia. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Encuentro Radio. Comunícate con nosotros a través de nuestro WhatsApp 302-521-2342.
From Colombia,
the Philippines,
the United States,
Germany,
Kenya,
Austria,
we are bringing our voices together to reflect on gender and social justice.
A multicultural look in the mirror at our society.
Welcome to Mirror Voices.
Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Colombian time.
Brought to you by CEPALC and Encuentro Radio.
Can you hear me?
Welcome to a special episode of Mirrored Voices here on Encuentro Radio, the digital radio station for CEPALC. We are in Halloween mode today, almost. Tomorrow is Halloween. My name is Hannah, and I'm here today with Michelle and Mariana. Michelle, we missed you last week. Great to have you back.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah. I was doing some other work things, but I'm back now with my Halloween nails.
Oh, good. Oh,
that's good. That's cute.
And how are you, Mariana?
I'm good. I'm scared about how I'm going to return tomorrow to my house because every day happens something with the Transmilenio.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the Monday I arrived the Transmilenio station to 1:20, and the bus arrived 1:50. So it was like a half hour waiting there, and nothing happened. And yesterday I go out to my university and was like one person trying to walk to in the station to trying to go to other like bar, but was so difficult. And one man up there said, "I'm waiting the bus for more than 1 hour." But what's awful? I don't know what's happening with Bogota actually, but I'm okay. I'm happy to be here.
It seems to almost always be like that. In Bogota.
Yeah, it's like
I've never heard someone say, "Oh man, Transmilenio was great today."
I feel like Transmilenios are better than the blue ones.
Yeah, it's different, but the idea is different. But the thing is, like every day, there's like a group of person that is doing like strike every day. It's like really every day, and. The people have the right to do that, but every day and all the moment in Twitter, or well, X, is writing, the bus is not driving for these places. It's like, what I'm gonna, how I'm to do to go to my house. So I hope tomorrow it's gonna, everything be good because I wanna go my home earlier.
Yeah, and Halloween sometimes that it gets crazier.
It's awful.
Because people also use it as an excuse to, especially at night, just this day to use it as an excuse to, you know, make more chaos and mayhem.
Yeah, I remember the last Halloween in my neighborhood. There's not, like, possibility that there's bus in the street. Just people. Like, the street full of people. So it's like, I tried to arrive. And I called my parents, like, maybe I need to walk. This is not moving. And I was, like, maybe more than 20 minutes in the bus waiting that move a little bit because it was, like, far to my house. But it's, like, a chaos. So I hope everything be good for tomorrow.
Yeah. What are some other, like, I guess Halloween, we often talk about, like, spooky, scary things. I think part of the reality of living in Bogota, one of the scary things is having to take Transmilenio during rush hour. I'd say that's a spooky, scary thing. What are some other, like, scary, terrifying things in our lives?
Yeah, I don't know.
I would say some movies. Because this other time I was trying to watch this movie, Don't Move. It's new on Netflix. And then I watched it until, I think, 30 minutes in, and then I was like, oh my god, I cannot continue with this because I want to sleep. And I definitely know, I'm definitely, my subconscious is going to be thinking about this. So I would say there are some pretty scary movies out there.
Scary movies?
No, I can't. I'm trying in a moment, like, with my family. I have that. Like idea to some movies with your cousin, but everyone was like, scary movies, like, I don't know, I'm not sure. So I don't remember the movie because I don't like it, so, but I have my pizza in my hands and I went trying to eating and was like the moment, the scary moment, and my pizza flying. So like maybe no, that's not for me. Just Disney movies for Halloween. No more.
I'm usually the one to for scary movies, the like annoying person to watch them with who like makes jokes or makes fun of them as a way to like break the tension so that I don't get scared as like making fun of them. Yeah, I think going out alone as a young woman can sometimes be pretty spooky, pretty scary in in Bogota. But hopefully none of those things happen tomorrow or tonight, that we have a fun Halloween. Because Halloween can be fun too.
Yeah, it's like a good idea to be fun, but oh no, I prefer just all like hocus pocus.
Yes.
And no more. And I remember when I was a child, I'm scared of this sister. Aww. So I was like, no. Right now I can say it, but before, no.
And today we have connecting Halloween with women, women who are important to a lot of the things we watch or see or use during Halloween, or the way women are represented in some of these things. So we'll go maybe to a quick song break. We obviously have like the Halloween music today, and we'll be right back with some story about Frankenstein.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the match.
He did the monster match.
The monster match.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the match.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the match.
He did the monster match. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the match.
They did the monster match.
The monster match.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the match.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the match.
They did the monster match. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the match.
They played the monster match.
The monster match.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the match.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the match.
They played the monster match. Out from his coffin, Rack's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the match.
It's now the monster match.
The monster match.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the match.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the match.
It's now the monster match. Now everything's cool, Drax a part of the band, and my monster mash is the hit of the land.
So chances are you've already seen some Halloween decorations that use Frankenstein's monster today or this week. Andres's mom made a Frankenstein decoration, a bunch of them, and gave one of them to us that we have on our door. And it got me thinking about this monster of Frankenstein, which we also even hear referenced in the song that we just listened to, Monster Mash, and it starts out with, like, the scientist in the laboratory,
yeah,
and the monster came to life. You know, these are references to Frankenstein and his monster. So chances are that even if you've never read the book or seen any of the twists in movies or in, like, plays or theater, you know about and can probably even recognize the image of Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
Have either of you read the book or watched movies based on Frankenstein?
I did not read the book, but I've watched different movies. I feel like there are a lot, because I feel like I've seen ancient ones and I've seen the modernized ones,
mm-hmm,
but the ancient ones always seem like pretty cool than the modern vision ones,
mm,
because they're somewhat, I don't know, distorted type of thing.
I don't read the book too. I don't remember if I saw a movie. Maybe yes, I'm not sure. Maybe like like a cute movie about Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of versions. There are children's,
yeah,
versions. There's
something
there's
like
scary
that.
Movie
like
ones.
Children,
okay,
version is better for me and,
okay,
for my dreams.
I started reading because I had never read it either. But I started reading this week. I'm almost done. I'll probably finish by tomorrow or Friday. Make it like a Halloween week special.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that has become this like pop culture, easily recognizable image and reference, referenced in a lot of different movies, a lot of different shows, different versions. Kind of we all know what it is, even if we've never read it. But for this week and on the Encuentro Feminista videos that we post on our Instagram, Sepalk Encuentro Radio, if you haven't already, go check it out. I was looking into this monster a little bit and was reminded, kind of forgotten or it was overlooked easily, that this monster was created by Mary Shelley. A lot of people look over the fact that it was a woman that started this whole phenomenon and assume that it was by a man, because most of our like scary terror genre things are often pretty male heavy. Sure. But the original Frankenstein book was published in 1818, and it's considered the first science fiction horror novel. Even today, people don't necessarily connect the image or the book with the author, who was a woman named Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley. Maybe if you're in more feminist spaces, you recognize the name Mary Wollstonecraft, maybe. That was her mother, so she's the daughter of Mary Wollstonecraft, who was a pioneer in the early feminist movements. She wrote A Vindication of the Rights of Women, which was published in 1792, arguing that boys and girls should have access to the same education. She wrote that it was the system of education at the time that made women more dependent and less capable. So not that they were inherently less capable than men, but that we were educating women to be reliant or to be incapable or to be less than. Whereas if you offered the same education to boys and girls, girls would be able to achieve a lot more, even professional careers, not just being, you know, a mother and wife. Which was pretty radical at the time. That was in 1792, and it took a while for those ideas to really be implemented in society, unfortunately. However, Mary Wollstonecraft died shortly after her daughter was born, but we can see kind of that influence on education that was, you know, inherited by her daughter as well. The author, Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley, was, you know, obviously very intelligent in science, in literature, in philosophy, and you see that a lot in her works as well. So Mary Shelley, the daughter, wrote Frankenstein inspired in part by her own dreams and nightmares. She got pregnant at the age of 16, but the baby died shortly after she was born. And Mary wrote in her journals that she started having these, like, terrifying dreams in which she could bring her baby back to life. And she would spend time with her husband and friends reading ghost stories. Okay. And so they kind of challenged each other to write their own scary story, which is how Mary Shelley started writing Frankenstein, thinking that what scared her in her dreams, this idea of, like, bringing her child back to life, was scary to her and could probably scare a lot of other people as well. She also played off of tragedies in her life and some public or common fears at the time. So in the late 1700s, medical discoveries of resuscitation were made more public. So with campaigns showing how someone for drowning, for example, seemingly dead, could be brought back to life. Today we kind of, you know, you CPR, you know, the shock that we see on TV or on medical shows or whatever is pretty common. But at the time, this was like new medicine, new technology to be able to bring someone who seems like they're dead back to life. And a lot of people were scared by this idea of this like godlike power to bring life into somebody. And as it turns out, Mary Wollstonecraft, the mother, was also, victim or experienced this in her own. She tried to commit suicide by drowning herself in a river a few years before her daughter was born. And she wrote, after the experience of being resuscitated, that it was, you know, more depressing and bitter, what she called being snatched from death. She died of fever a few days after her daughter was born. There were also, similar at the time, scientific discoveries about the power of electricity and electric shocks that had been used to, like, move animal tissues. So scientists publishing their findings that they could, you know, pump electricity into, like, a frog or something, and the legs would twitch. This, that idea of, like, that seemed, again, like you're bringing to life something that was dead. That was kind of scary to a lot of people. And so this combination of fantasy, fictional story, but combined with some of the current scientific discoveries that were going on or that had recently been made known, is something that had never really been done before in literature. And it turned out to be even more terrifying because you're taking not just like a scary ghost story or something, but adding fears that people already had based on scientific evolutions, and kind of playing off of those fears of like what could happen or is this, could it be possible, what this story is talking about. So a brief overview of the Frankenstein story, if you've never heard it, which I'm learning, which was not at all what I expected. I kind of knew that there's a big monster, and he's dangerous and people are afraid of him. And that was kind of the extent of what most of us know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more to the Frankenstein story. For starters, Frankenstein is the name of the doctor that creates him.
Yeah.
The monster doesn't have a name. Now we often call Frankenstein the monster. However, the monster doesn't actually have a name. So Dr. Frankenstein becomes obsessed with this idea of creating life and takes human parts from graves and puts them together in his laboratory to create this living monster, which he is immediately terrified when it comes to life. And the monster escapes the lab. And it turns out that the monster kind of tells his own story at some point. And he's turns out to be actually pretty innocent, like the innocence of a child, but with the scary exterior of this dangerous, tall, giant monster. He had been looking for acceptance and a place in society, but whenever the humans saw him, they were terrified, assumed that he would be violent, and attacked him. So he was hiding out, you know, trying to survive on, like, berries and nuts, like, not even really carnivorous. And he would try to observe humanity, try to find people who might accept him, but every time he was rejected, people were afraid of him, you know, before he could really get to know people or talk to people or try to, like, defend himself, they would scream and run away and were horrified by his appearance. And so the monster goes through this kind of, like, existential crisis of, why was I created if there's no place in the world for me? How is it that my own creator, my own Dr. Frankenstein, was terrified of me? Like, what do I do? What's the point of life? What's the point of all of this? And he turns violent out of despair, out of this frustration. And the monster seeks out Dr. Frankenstein to beg him to make a companion, a female version of himself, so he doesn't have to be alone. Because he makes this argument that no one should have to live like this. Like, give me a companion, give me someone who won't be terrified of my appearance, and I'll go live in the woods and never bother anyone again. I just don't want to be alone.
Yeah.
And Dr. Frankenstein agrees, but then kind of changes his mind because he thinks it's too dangerous. What if the female version of the monster is more violent? Or what if they make monster babies and end up attacking all of humanity? And so the monster, like, seeks violent revenge for all of this. Brings up a lot of philosophical questions about life, about creation, and kind of poses this question of, like, who is the real monster? The monster or humanity? You know, the humans that turned him violent because he had no other option, because they would not accept him or because they judged him based on his appearance. I'm a little more than halfway done with the book. Very interesting. I gotta say, it's a lot more than what I thought it was. And like many books written by women at the time, it was published anonymously. So this was in 1818. Mary Shelley was afraid of how the public would react to this, like, controversial and terrifying content, especially written by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
However, it became a huge success off the bat. And then it was published again with a preface by her husband, Percy Shelley, and a dedication to her father, William Godwin, including their names, but still without the author's name. So most people assumed it was one of these two men who wrote the book. And it continued to have great success. Even people started adapting it to theater, to make plays, other things. And then a few years later, finally, Mary Shelley was able to publish the book with her name, now that it was like a huge success already. And there, since then, have been lots of versions. In 1931, Universal Studios made a movie version of Frankenstein, which pushed the story into even further success in pop culture, icon status, creating most of the imagery we recognize as Frankenstein's monster today. So probably if you've seen an image of Frankenstein's monster, it probably looks similar to that movie from 1931.
We even have a similar personality in the Addams Family and also in Hotel Transylvania.
And there's even there's like a lot of and even a lot of people draw connections to Frankenstein and things like Edward Scissorhands or Poor Things, a movie that came out very recently, but the same idea of like bringing life into a body that was lifeless. And there's even, you know, in the book, the monster calls Frankenstein his creator. It's like, you should be, you know, kind to me. You should, if anyone should love me, it should be you. And this idea kind of creation, almost in a religious way. And in Poor Things, she calls her doctor, her creator, God. You know, there are a lot of parallels. Even if things aren't exactly calling it Frankenstein, it's affected a lot of the science fiction horror genre, even today. And this was from 1818.
Is Poor Things a good movie, though?
I thought it was very interesting. It has, there's a lot to dissect in it.
I only watched 5 minutes and I slept. So that's why I'm
okay. You could try again. I would say try again.
Okay.
It's very interesting. There's a lot. There's a lot to unpack. And I think it's also a clear example of Frankenstein and, you know, Mary Shelley not putting her name, attaching it to it at first. Of, we can probably guess that, like, if people knew from the beginning that it was a woman who had written it, it would be controversial, but, like, in a bad way, or being banned or criticized heavily or saying that she's, you know, this sick woman, or judging her or all these things, it probably wouldn't have reached the success that it did. And it's an example of this like implicit male bias of, if there's no name attached, we'll assume that it's a man. Yeah. As if like that's like the neutral state, the neutral gender is being male. And in order for people to realize or to think that it's possible to be by a woman, then you have to specifically name her. So there's a lot more to go into, but that is kind of a brief version of the story of Frankenstein and the monster and the creator that is Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley.
Yeah, I guess it's like a good idea to start talking about this because it's like the same like idea in a lot of cases, not just in this book, that the husband was the person that do all the things. And that's not the truth. So I guess right now in this moment about this topic of Frankenstein and Mary Shelley is like, right now there's a lot of more people talking about it and say that was a woman that write the book. But obviously there's a lot of people that not continue believing this.
And people at some point tried to say that, no, it was really, you know, she may have had an idea, but it was her father or her husband that really helped out. But there are like records of her original drafts. You can see, no, her husband and her father may have helped with a little bit of editing, but really the story, the content, all of that was hers and continues to be. So we'll go to maybe another quick song and be right back.
Skeletons and shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul, seal your doom tonight. Spooky, scary skeletons speak with such a screech. You'll shake and shudder in surprise when you hear these zombies shriek. With no sorry skeletons, you're so misunderstood. You only want to socialize,
but I don't think we should.
A spooky, scary skeleton shouts startling, shrilly screams. They'll sneak from their sarcophagus and just won't leave you be.
Scary, 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 scary.
take it semi-serious.
These scary skeletons are silly all the same. The smile is travel slowly by and drive you so insane. Sticks and stones will pick up on me, seldom let you snooze. A spooky scary skeleton will wake you with a
of some of these women in the terror and horror genre. Michelle, tell us a little bit more about some women in the genre.
Okay, today I'm going to be shining the spotlight on incredible women who are making waves in the world of horror films. From spine-chilling stories to groundbreaking direction, these talented women are redefining the genre. First up, I'm going to talk about Jennifer Kent, the brilliant mind behind The Babadook. Released in 2014, this psychological horror film quickly became a modern classic. Kent's masterful storytelling and direction brought to life the terrifying tale of a mother and a son haunted by a sinister presence. The Babadook is not just a horror film, it is a deep exploration of grief and motherhood, showcasing Kent's ability to blend emotional depth with spine-tingling horror. And then next we have Karin Kusama, known for her work on Jennifer's Body, which I saw today, and The Invitation. Kusama's films often feature strong, complex female characters and explore themes of empowerment and revenge. Jennifer's Body, starring Megan Fox, has gained a cult following for its unique blend of horror, dark comedy, while The Invitation keeps viewers on the edges of their seats with its slow burning tension and shocking twists. And let's not forget Annalily Amypour, the visionary director behind A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. This Iranian American filmmaker created a genre defining film that blends horror, western, and romance. Set in a ghost town, the film follows a skateboarding vampire who preys on men who disrespect women. Amypour's unique style and storytelling have earned her a critical acclaim and dedicated fan base. Moving on to the realm of writing, we have Shirley Jackson, whose work has left an indelible mark on the horror genre. Jackson's novel, The Haunting of Hill House, is considered one of the greatest ghost stories ever written. Her ability to create an atmosphere of dread and her complex, psychologically rich characters have influenced countless writers and filmmakers. I remember I've seen the Haunted Bly Mansion, which is one of her films. It was super scary, but it was so good because, like, the ending is one of those things where it's, like, not a cliche. It's a twist, which is very interesting. And then another name to remember is Carmen Maria Machado, whose collection, Her Body and Other Parts, blends horror, fantasy, and science fiction. Machado's stories often explore themes of gender, sexuality, and the body, pushing the boundaries of traditional horror. Her work has been praised for its originality and emotional depth, making her a standout voice in contemporary horror literature. And let's not overlook Leigh Janiak, the director of Fear Street trilogy on Netflix. Janiak's adaptation of R.L. Stine's beloved book series brought a fresh modern twist to the slasher genre. With strong female leads and a storyline that spans centuries, the Fear Street Trilogy has celebrated for its inventive storytelling and nostalgic nods to classic horror. These women are just a few examples of the incredible talent shaping the future of horror. Their work not only terrifies and entertains, but also challenges and expands the genre, bringing new perspectives and voices to the forefront. So as we celebrate Halloween, let's take a moment to appreciate the contribution of these remarkable women. Their creativity and courage continue to push the boundaries of horror, making the genre more diverse. That's all I had.
Thank you.
For listeners.
Yeah, I think we still often have this idea of, like, women being delicate and, you know, pure and, you know, the ones who get scared more easily, and all the men, you know, have to come in and comfort us and protect us, which makes it, you know, harder for women to come out and show, like, that they have, you know, these scary stories, and they can create things that scare even, like, the toughest men. Because we still have that bias of, like, oh, the delicate flower, you know, have to protect her. It's like, no, she she can defend herself just fine.
She's good at this.
And following that idea, that made me remember Lorraine Warren, because she was the most powerful, like, medium 6 in this time, and she was the person that solution, like, a lot of the cases, not the husband. But if you remember a lot of the interview that they have, a lot of the question was for the husband, for Ed Warren. Is like, no, she was the powerful in that in that group, in that couple.
Shall we go right into our next topic, speaking of women, in this Halloween, of another common figure that we do see more visibly, maybe not in a good way, but...
No, it's not like a good way, but...
But witches. On the other hand, we have this idea of witches that are almost exclusively women.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to talk about the city of witches, like Salem, and why it's like so like famous, this town.
Yeah.
More in Halloween. So obviously, there's a lot of cities that celebrate Halloween, but in Salem, a small town in Massachusetts, knows as the City of Wishes. So we talk a little bit about history. A lot of years ago, so was in 1692. So this is the historic Salem witch trial take place in the city. Over the course of a year and 3 months, 19 innocent people, women, because here said people, but in a lot of cases of this history, be just women, were hanged, and one of them cruised to death. So for a lot of people, this is crazy, but this is the reality, this is the story, this happened. So in the Puritan society of the time, a lot of women, in this case, was two girls, was like being accused of witchcraft. It all began when two girls, Betty Paris and Abigail Williams, began to behave strangely, throwing objects, contorting themselves in unusual ways. It was then that accused of having inflicted this harm on the girls and having played with the devil. Sarah Osborne, Sarah Good, and Tibuta, a black slave who griffined the girl with story to keep them awake, were accused of witchcraft. So we can say right now, there's just women. Because in the article that I'm reading about this, talk about person, but this history just for women that accused that be a witch. So... later, a lot of years, accused more than 200 people. And not just accused, in person, and this event alleged collived, like, hysteria in which everyone was, like, a suspect. This event marked the city forever, making world famous for this macabre history. So, there's like different places of Salem that you can go to learn more about this. The one most visit space in the city is the Salem Witch Museum. So throw a diorama, sepulcher boys narrate the tragic story of the Salem trials. Upon leaving the show, they explain how the concept of witch have evolved over time. If at the time of trial they were normal people, who fear harms the only thing they did has healed through plants and nature with a very peaceful appearance. So it was, and there's a lot of people think that the idea to continue believing about the witch not help with the movie The Wizard of Oz, El Mago de Oz, because they appear like the witch with the green face and the big nose and all these things, these old ideas that help a lot of people to believe about this history. So there's other one movie that inspired on this thing that it's Hocus Pocus that talking about a little bit, but in the there's like tours in Salem that you can go, that Salem Ghost Tours, that start in the night, obviously.
Yeah.
It all begins in the Salem Witch Trial Memorial, a part where 300 years later, it was decided to honor the memory of those people who lost their life during the trials and justice. On a small town benches, the names of 20 victims and who they died have been written. Other one is the Old Burying Point Cemetery, the oldest and darkest cemetery in Salem, where some of the judges who were involved in these cases be in this cemetery. There's other part of the town that was destroyed by a fire that came from the same tree where the supposed witcher were hanged. So there's a lot of people that go to this place to know more about the wishes and all these things. But the idea is trying to break that idea. It's just women because that happened. And not just in Salem, in the history, when we talk about the moment that the woman trying to help like a person, always in that moment have like plans and have the nature to do that. But that idea is that you do that like a woman, that's give the idea that you're a witch. So yeah, it's like trying to break that idea. And obviously the movies is not help anything because you saw a woman like a witch. You saw a man like a wizard. So it's like the big difference to this idea. So there's a lot of people that continue believing in the witches. With I don't know if that's true or not, but yeah, it's like die to broke that idea that the only witches is just a woman.
Yeah, I remember seeing. I saw yesterday, I think it was yesterday, like a meme online. It was like woman in the 1600s, I think, and immediately interrupted by a man saying she's a witch.
Yeah,
because it was often women, and especially if you showed like interest in science, experimenting. These were not not scientific experiments, but witchcraft.
Yeah.
Or interest in medicine and curing, you know, people with herbs and, you know, no, witchcraft.
It wasn't only those complex things, but I recently watched a movie from France, which is from this year. And then there was a woman who spoke in English, and then everyone was like, it was hate in the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
And then when she spoke in English, and everyone was like, she's a witch,
she's speaking tongues, in a foreign
language, that sort of thing. And I was so scared for her, even though it was a movie, but I was so scared, like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
And I remember learning about the Salem Witch Trials in history class in high school, and looking through, like, all the different explanations that people try to come up with of why this happened, because it sounds like it's out of a horror movie or something, but it was historical fact. Like, this happened in Salem, and not only in Salem but in other parts of the world as well. So there are theories of like a bad crops. I think it was like a bad wheat crops or things that were, you know, making people sick. And so the whole town or the whole area, people were eating, like, diseased crops, and it made them hallucinate, and it made them kind of go a little bit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
There's other theories on just, like, the power of, like, mob psychology of, you know, once some people start pointing the finger and generating this fear, this kind of mob mentality of everyone joining in,
yeah.
even if they don't believe it, even if it's not true, they kind of join in as a defense mechanism as well of, like, if I'm on their side, they won't attack me kind of thing.
Yeah.
Other things about, you know, obviously machismo or, you know, anti-feminist things of any woman who is problematic or disobedient or different from the ideal woman. Most of these trials were headed by men of power. So if they saw women as a threat to that power, you're a witch.
Yeah.
And a lot of women died because it was also like, oh, in order to test if you're a witch, we'll, you know, tie you to a rock or something heavy and drown you in the ocean. And if you survive, or in the lake or in the river or whatever, if you survive, then you're a witch. Now thinking about that logic of, like, okay, and if she's not a witch, you just killed her, right?
Yeah, she's just gonna die.
Or like, oh, if we burn her at the stake and she survives, she's a witch. Again, that logic, not so great, and led to a lot of innocent people dying because people were just hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just, like, the idea is just that things for the women, not for the men. And for a lot of people, it's like, in that time, not so much right now, but was like a scary moment when a woman feel like powerful and trying to talk
mm-hmm.
about in different moments. But yeah, it's something that we need to start broke and start giving, like, the power for women like Mary Shelley that
mm-hmm.
like write this story, like, so famous, like Frankenstein.
Yeah. So I think we'll go to another song and then have to say goodbye for today's program. We are just about out of time, but before that, we'll listen to I Put a Spell on You.
You can't stop the things I do. I am alive. It's been 300 years, right down to the day. Now the witch is back. And there's hell to pay. I put a spell on you. And now you're mine! Hello, Salem! My name's Winifred. What's yours?
Just about out of time today
yeah.
for our Halloween special. Any other comments or things you want to add before we have to sign off?
Enjoy Halloween. Enjoy tomorrow. It's like, well, for a lot of people, it's like a party.
Mm-hmm.
And I
yeah.
guess this weekend here in Bogota, there's going to be a lot of Halloween parties
mm-hmm.
in here in Chapinero and other part of Bogota. It's like a good plan. It's something arrive. earlier, because if not, oh my god, it's so difficult to go inside. But everything's good.
Anything that you want to add, Michelle?
I would just like to say thank you for everyone who's tuned in to our Halloween special, and stay spooky, enjoy your Halloween, happy Halloween, and stay safe, please.
Yes. Have a fun and safe Halloween. Hopefully no one accuses you of being a witch. And see you, or we'll talk to you next week here on Encuentro Radio.
Same place, same time.
Bye.
Thank you, bye.
Something strange.
Come with us and you will see. This is our town of Halloween.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Pumpkins scream in the dead of night.
This is Halloween. Everybody make a scene.
Trick or treat. Tell the neighbors on the
diaphragm. It's so exciting.
Everybody's scream.
It's time for Halloween.
I am the one hiding under your bed. Teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs. Fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. 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 Halloween.
In this town we call home. Everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
In this town, don't we love it now? Everybody's waiting for the next surprise.
Round that corner and hiding in the trash can. Something's waiting there to pounce and how you scream.
This is Halloween.
Red and black.
And slightly green.
Aren't you scared?
Well, that's just fine.
Say it once, say it twice. Take a chance and roll the dice.
Ride with the moon in the dead of night.
Everybody scream. Everybody scream.
Here I am,
I am the clown with the tearaway face.
Here in a flash, vomit and trace.
I am the hoot and cuckoo stare.
Shadow on the moon at night, filling your dreams to the brim with fright.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween. Halloween, 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 Halloween.
Halloween, Halloween. Halloween.
Danger lurks everywhere. Life's no fun without a good scare.
That's our job.
But we're not mean in our town of Halloween.
It now.
Everyone's waiting for the next surprise.
Skeleton Jack might catch you in the back and
scream.